Welcome everybody to All About Symbian Insight Podcast number 160, recording this on Monday the 4th of April 2011. I am Steve Litchfield, and with me in the hot seat down in Sussex I have
Rafe Blanford,
who I believe is jetting off to Cannes for a bit of a jolly. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, I'm going off to the Connected Creativity Conference. And Steve, I resent the fact you just called it a jolly. It is in fact incredibly hard work. As I say, it's a conference that sort of sees a marriage of the TV and entertainment industry and how mobile is going to interact with that in the future. So I thought it'd be interesting to get a very different perspective to what we usually do at conferences, where typically I attend ones that are organised by the mobile industry and mobile focus, where this is really coming, as I say, from the entertainment industry. But I expect to hear about many of the similar topics, the role of smartphones, the role of sort of transmedia, cross-media, how that can develop in the future, and I'm sure there'll be apps and app stores playing a very large part of that. So I'm going to post a couple of reports from the conference, and they're not necessarily going to be Symbian specific, of course, but I think it would do well to sometimes have a broader horizon on these things, because for all that we get excited about mobile in terms of reaching awareness, I think the entertainment industry is just as big and much more important to the mass market than people in the mobile industry sometimes realise.
Yeah. Up in Hull we have
David Gilson. Hello, everybody.
Yes, and he's probably not jetting off anywhere, as neither am I. Just back from jetting in, back from America, is Ewan Spence.
Yes, one thing, it's not a jolly, it's la jolly. It's the feminine, and should not be confused with la jolly ronde, which is a language course for 3 to 11-year-olds, which, strangely enough, does come up as the top result of jolly in Google. I think Rafe is already well up on his French and his Spanish, because it covers that language as well.
It's amazing what you learn on the All About Symbian Insight. Now, Ewan,
I'm here all day.
You have the C601. You are, in fact, the C601 point man for this Nokia Symbian 3 smartphone. I haven't ever held one in my hands, believe it or not. But you're doing all your long-term review. Do you want to just trail that and the sort of the topics you'll be covering?
Indeed, yeah. I mean, the C6, which is now unfortunately, in some respects, been kind of demoted into my second pocket and is now carrying the GIF-GAF SIM as opposed to the Orange day-to-day SIM. This is the only issue that I have with the E7, which is I have to put the C601 away. It's a delightful little handset. It's a perfect definition of a pub phone. It can take a huge amount of damage. It's small. It doesn't really disturb the lines in a pocket or a ball gown dress or a sporran or anything like that. And it has all the same power and software as the E7 and the N8 and also the C7 as well. But there are some little caveats, some little peculiarities to it that I've spotted over the last 3 or 4 months of using it. I'm just going to, look in depth at that. It's all very well picking up a phone and on your first impression going, that's quite nice. And see, I'm not allowed to do the line this week, so everybody can feel it in themselves. But after 3 months, that's when you start to really find out about the phone. Like, where does all the dust gather when you move up all the battery cover? How good is that battery after a couple of charging cycles? And is it any good actually playing Angry Birds on a 3.2-inch screen? All that and more, and a screenshot of a Dire Straits album.
All of that coming up on allaboutsymbian.com from the inimitable Mr. Spence. Now, moving on with some items of news. This one's rather important. Nokia has just posted it's completed putting the Symbian source code online at symbian.nokia.com. This, of course, follows Nokia taking over the Symbian operating system from the Symbian Foundation, which is now just a licensing body. Nokia did say that they were going to return the code fully online, fully available, but under a slightly different license. David, have you got any more details on this?
Yeah, I'll hand over to Ref in a moment for the insights out of it. Although here's just a quick thing of things you need to know. Where you need to go on the internet is collab, which is collab. .symbian.nokia.com, and if you want to get at the source code, you have to actually register with Nokia, whether you're an individual developer or part of a company. When I actually looked at the site, things weren't complete. They actually say that they haven't got all of the source code up yet, but it'll be up soon. And in the documentation section, most of it was tagged as coming soon, apart from stuff about the GIT, Git repository. No giggles said from anyone.
all right, go on then.
When, with Symbian still being open source, allegedly, I was curious about how people will go about committing code back to Nokia for fixing things in Symbian. So I got in touch with Petra Sudling, who is Nokia's head of open source, and she gave me this statement. She said, as we committed when the Symbian Foundation announced its plans to ramp down, Nokia is offering Symbian through an alternative open and direct model for those who wish to use the platform. We encourage potential collaborators to discuss with the package owners at Nokia if they have any enhancements that are really useful and they believe could be incorporated into the platform. Currently, they can get in touch with us through the contact us function on the website. You recognize that this is a different model from what we had with the foundation, which encouraged submissions from anyone, but in reality generated few enhancements which were suitable for inclusion in the foundation's release. So you can still, it's still possible to get code in, but it's a less direct route. So I'll hand over to Rafe now.
Thank you, David. I think really the important point to make here is that Nokia have now made the source code available, but I think obviously the sort of impact of it has to be seen in the light of Nokia's strategy announcements back on February the 11th, and that Symbian, as they've termed it, is a franchise platform. That means it will continue for a couple of years, but the prospect of it being developed in terms of the next generation have probably fallen by the wayside, simply because, you know, without Nokia putting investment resources into the sort of next generation, it's unlikely to get there. That doesn't mean there won't be some interesting developments. I think under the auspices of the Symbian Foundation, there were some interesting contributions made, but realistically, I think there were probably less than 25 contributions made, and that was being generous with the actual definition of contribution. Of course, Nokia during that time made a number of very big enhancements to the code base, which we're now seeing, and we're going to continue to see some of them later in the year. So I think the Symbian as an open source platform, you know, that was really about contributions from outsiders, with Nokia obviously being the main driver. And although the contribution process is now less explicit, I'm not sure it will make any difference, given that the number of contributions previously were relatively small. I think it's probably fair to say that the wind has been taken out of Symbian's sails by Nokia's strategy announcement, but it'll be interesting to see whether it might find some uses elsewhere as sort of an embedded operating system. It's still possible that could go ahead. We'll be hearing more about the Symbios project in due course, where that might have some possibilities there. But I think the other important thing is, by having this source code readily available, it's available for developers who are using the Symbian platform for applications in particular, but potentially also other areas as well. They can have a look at the source code to see how things work and either replicate that or fix bugs or do workarounds in their code. And I know, talking to developers in the past, that was actually the thing that the source code was most utilized before, rather than the, you know, obvious open source usage. And then, of course, there's also the documentation available. The Symbian Wiki has been restored, and that's actually quite a useful resource for information about the platform, again, mainly for application developers. I mean, it's pretty clear that we're not going to see device manufacturers outside of Nokia releasing Symbian devices, in all likelihood. There's obviously still some activity in Japan, but the exact future of that is yet to be determined. I suspect they're going to use their Symbian sort of family devices the next 3 or 4 years, maybe even the next generation, but after that we'll presumably have to look at switching to Linux or something else. But that's, as I say, a long time down the track.
Yeah.
But in general, this is good news. It's maybe taking a little longer than people were expecting, but Nokia have kept to their commitment. The source code is now available, along with some of the ancillary documentation and bits and pieces. And sort of all the hub for this, as David mentioned, is collab.symbian.nokia.com. But sort of the homepage, if you like, for the Symbian platform now is symbian.nokia.com. And there is, you know, various bits of information on that. As we said, there's the source and the documentation. There's also a blog where you can keep track of things. And we'll be following this as it develops, and obviously letting you know as there's updates to this. And I think, as David suggested, there's you know, all the basic stuff is up there now, but there is some more bits and pieces to come. But as I say, we do have to see this realistically, all in the light of Nokia's strategy change. That doesn't mean, as I say, this isn't a useful resource, but the Symbian Foundation was really something that was set up to develop Symbian a long time into the future. And obviously, with the strategy change, we now have a sort of a shelf life on Symbian. You know, you can argue the length of it. It's certainly still going to be Symbian devices being bought in 2015. Yeah. But obviously, the importance of the source code, in a way, does become less important. We have to be realistic about that. But nonetheless, still a very useful resource for developers.
while it's all well and great having the source code out, I think one of the great losses of Symbian was in the last 2-3 years, when even if you had that source code, to actually build a piece of Symbian hardware was incredibly difficult. You needed, you know, low-level device drivers. You needed people who understood that code fluently and were willing to work on that. You know, it was really hard for like a startup or something to go off and just, oh, we've got all the bits, we've got the same CPU, we've got memory, we've got board, we've got screen, let's make a device. I mean, the Wild Ducks project, you know, for all of its best intentions, it shouldn't have taken that long to churn out as a Symbian circuit board, breadboard. It should be something that could have been measured in days or weeks, let alone months or years. And, you know, the fact that Wild Ducks, even with backing in Symbian engineers, really didn't make any progress, I think shows that the idea of having source codes was great as a sort of poster. But when you got back to the real world for somebody who was maybe wanting to take a PDA or a small laptop or their own phone or device, it was really, really difficult.
Yeah, I think that's right, Ewan, not Steve. Sorry about that. and actually, I think this illustrates quite nicely one of the reasons behind Nokia's decision to have its strategy shift. This was really about, and we've mentioned this before, it was developing the next generation of the platform was going to be very expensive. And because Symbian was designed around resource constraints of an earlier era, some of the things of bringing up devices were a lot harder than it needed to be. And there were certain projects around to try and make that easier, you know, that you had a sort of compatibility layer and then an adaptation layer. That were all, you know, ongoing projects, but none of them came to complete fruition. We're seeing the results of some of them in the most recent versions, but in reality, they didn't quite find their full flower, if you like. And so I think, you know, the point that you're making here, Ewan, is part of the reason why Symbian wasn't able to find much success outside of the Nokia as a device manufacturer, and there wasn't much prospect of that changing. And sort of Nokia said, can we do this on our own? Quite apart from all the, you know, the baggage that came with that. So in one sense, this sort of, you know, it's great to see the source code out there. But as you say, you know, the problems with the Symbian platform in terms of why Nokia decided to make a technical change. And of course, there are plenty of arguments you can make the other way. And I think that will be a what if debate for a long time to come. But obviously, the evidence was clear from, you know, other manufacturers trying to use it and not really succeeding. Those problems don't go away with this source code being published. And as you say, you know, the likelihood of people taking it up probably isn't all that great. As I say, there are some possibilities for, you know, specialist usage in embedded U systems and Symbios, which is a sort of EU-funded out of the Artemis program, to sort of take that forward and maybe develop some interesting thing there. Do have some possibilities, but it has to be said, I think the chance of anything big coming out of that are relatively unlikely. But you never know. But I think being realistic here, and other people are going to write up without even thinking about it, this source code is more, I think, about having it out in the public domain. So if people do want to use it, is there available. But the idea that you might be able to take this and upgrade existing devices or, you know, create custom firmware doesn't really work, because although the platform code is one thing, yes, that's all available. As Ewan says, there's a lot of device drivers and other components that go into sort of making up a complete firmware or bit of software that you can then put on a phone. And so although people might imagine that this is everything you need, that's not really the case. And a lot of the, you know, device drivers, and that's for specific processors and chipsets that are in the phones, are still proprietary. You know, the copyright on those is owned by Nokia and other device manufacturers in those cases, and so we won't be seeing those released. So don't expect to see a sort of a custom ROM scene that you get similar in the Android world, simply because the device drivers and sort of the necessary, if you like, the final 5%, the bringing up of devices, the integration elements, are not available. And that is an important point to make.
And quite a few of the applications, Rafe, as well, certainly at Nokia's end, they're certainly not part of the core Symbian, and they'll be proprietary to their own devices.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, you can replace some of those with third-party applications, but yes, in terms of the complete experience, it's much like, you know, Android in that sense. You know, the bare-bones Android is not complete, which is why you need to offer other things. And it's the same is true of other platforms as well, but I think it's particularly true of Symbian, where I think Nokia, it's probably fair to say, deliberately didn't put everything into the open source with the Symbian Foundation. That certainly didn't help matters, although I don't think that made it any more terminal than it would have been otherwise.
I think one of the things that Symbian never got over was, when they were at the Symbian Foundation, is when a manufacturer would come to them and say, we're interested in using Symbian. One of the first things they would do is say, well, we can't offer any technical help. We can point you towards third-party developers and code houses that will help you do the drivers, but there was very little direct support offered from Symbian beyond, oh, we know people who can do that sort of stuff for you if you want to give them a lot of money. I always thought that, you know, yeah, the Symbian Foundation missed a trick there. They needed to have a lot more investment of developers doing all that stuff to try and build that broad base, but essentially, you know, strangled in terms of resources. And in terms of hardware and drivers going forward, we can see examples. Anyone who's done any work on netbooks and trying to put Linux on these, you know, including the Nokia Booklet 3G, but also others, will know the tale of the GMA500 graphics chip. This is a graphics chip that is not completely open source. It's put on the board for all the Intel Z Atom processors. And every time you try and put a Linux installation on one of these netbooks or tablets, you know, you can't find a driver for the GMA500. You have to roll back to previous versions of the Linux kernel. It just is impossible to get around, and this one issue stops so much development. And given the fact that it's driver support, closed off chips, I think that anybody attempting to do anything with this version of the Symbian source code is going to have a big problem. I think if somebody wants to make a go of it, what we need to have is I dare say it, but something like Google's Android, which is we have a virtual machine that sits on top of the hardware and you run Symbian inside that. If there could be a black box Symbian that could be dropped on, that would be great. That's probably the only way I could see this source code actually living.
Yeah, I can't believe we just spent almost 20 minutes, guys, talking about source code, but we must move on. There is quite a few extra items of news this week. OviMaps 3.6, a pretty perfect application. I've been using it out and about the last week or so. I'm just bowled over, really, by how stable it is now, the integration of traffic, the integration of speed cameras, the navigation, just all works at the moment, where you can load entire countries over Wi-Fi. And version 3.6, which is the version that brought a lot of that in, has now graduated from Nokia Beta Labs, is well and truly installed on most of my devices, and you can grab it from the Ovi store. There is a trick in terms of if you've already got the beta installed, either you can either remove that, I guess, and then reinstall it from the store, or if you use the /download trick on the URL bar in the store, once you've signed into the Ovi store, you can just download the SIS file directly. And if you both of those fail, we've actually put a link to the SIS file up on our main story entitled OviMaps 3.6 officially graduates, so you can grab it from our server as well. Also released in the last couple of days, ostensibly not actually in beta because it's not through Beta Labs, but it's actually through the store, is IM, as in instant messaging for Nokia, both for both S65th edition and Symbian 3. David, what's your verdict on this so far?
Well, I have good news and bad news, and I'll do the good news first just to be positive. Okay. The user interface is great. It's really clean and easy to follow. I really like it. Has a home screen widget, so it'll slowly cycle between all the chat services that you're logged into, and it'll give you a preview of your last unread IM and tell you how many open conversations you have, and you can even change your online status from the widget, that's great. I mean, that's what home screen widget should be all about, function and like dashboard information. Very good. And it integrates with the contacts application, so that if you link your contacts with your instant messaging contacts, you'll actually see online status icons in your contacts list. And when you click onto the summary card for an individual contact, chat actually appears as a contact method. So that's all great. Thumbs up. The bad news is that contact linking has to be done manually, completely manually. It doesn't even have the suggestions feature that you see in Nokia Social. And I think the user interface seems to be very sluggish and at times actually inaccurate. There's times when I was tapping on menu items and something else was being selected. So I hate to say it because it's a very good effort, but I think it wasn't ready to leave beta because it's still suffering performance issues. But on the whole, it should be regarded in the same class as Nokia Social in that it's got 90% of the functionality. If only it shipped on phones rather than having to be installed from the Ovi store, but I'm sure it will come in future firmware updates. It very well fits the class of my first instant messaging application, and having the integration with contacts is very good. I'm just not happy with the performance of it yet.
Yeah, is it, I guess it's fair to say that in basing IM for Nokia on web runtime, which is a system that Nokia keep coming back to and which does have some ultimate performance problems, certainly on the current version of the OS, was possibly a bad call. Presumably, you and instant messaging, you need a very responsive, very very fast, very slick application, don't you? Even above and beyond Nokia Social. I mean, IM really is for quick fire replies.
I'm going to be controversial here and say I don't think IM works on a phone. I mean, we've been, so many companies have been really pushing to get IM going, that this would have been a nice application, but a bit of a sideshow. Back in about 2007, I think the world has moved on. You have to stay connected. You have to constantly be, you know, working. It's expected to be a lot, much larger flow and longer text messages. I think this has been superseded by many people with the likes of Facebook statuses and Twitter and various other social networks. Is there a business case for IM? Well, there always is. I mean, the fact that we're recording and doing most of the All About Symbian editorial work in a Skype IM window using text is proof of that. But is it, you know, I don't think IM is best suited for a mobile device unless you have a really rock-solid interface. And this is far from being rock-solid. The only thing I can say that's rocky about this is it's about as fast as Rocky 4.
So speaks the asynchronous generation.
I think, yay!
I think that may be true if you're a Twitter and a heavy Facebook user, but not everyone does, and I think IM still has a place, and I think Ewan's perhaps just a little bit too old to realise that IM has sort of taken over it in many ways, and I would agree it's not for everybody, and on a mobile device, you know, doing instant chat back and forth doesn't always work, but I only think you have to look at the success of something like BlackBerry Messenger to see that IM can work on a mobile device, and in a lot of cases it's used to replace text messaging simply because of the cost of sending a text every time in a chat conversation. You can't do multiple chats, etc., etc. You know, there's a cost issue there, so I think IM can work on a device. I've not explicitly tried this on this latest version, but I have tried the earlier version on a 65th edition. And yes, there are some performance issues, I think, with using web runtime. I think, you know, this was probably one of the last big web runtime projects we'll see from Nokia in the future. It'll switch over to Qt. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if this is redeveloped in Qt, as I would expect to happen to Nokia Social in due course as well. When exactly that will happen, it's hard to say. But you know, web runtime was meant to be a unifying influence, and the idea would be that it would run across, you know, obviously Series 40, Symbian, and Migo. Obviously, there's a changing landscape there, and it turned out that web runtime was maybe a bit ahead of its time in that, you know, web is a platform, and would it change with HTML5 coming? It's difficult to say at this point in time. But I would definitely take issue with Ewan's idea that IM doesn't work on a phone. I think it does, and some of the most successful mobile applications are, you know, from IM. We look at things like Fring, Nimbuzz, and I think the latest one of WhatsApp Messenger, and as well as a number of others, you know, from IM solutions, you know, Skype, the basic messenger ones, and Yahoo and AIM. All of those, some of those are some of the most downloaded apps ever. If you look at the sort of various records, they have tens of millions of downloads. Often these individual applications, sometimes even more, collectively represent a very sizable chunk of the app downloads. I mean, it is fair to say that it is in a specific segment, and because quite often those who don't own computers you know, find IM popular. If you own a computer, yes, obviously the IM experience on the desktop is easier than doing it on a phone, but I, you know, don't think that should take away from the mobile portability and the cost convenience that IM brings on a phone. So just to take slight issue with, you know, Ewan's idea that IM doesn't, I think it does, and I think you look at BlackBerry Messenger as the ultimate example of that. But that does perhaps go back to something Ewan said, that if you get the user experience right, the user interface, which I think obviously RIM have done with BBM, then it can work. And perhaps with this latest Nokia offering, there's still work to do in improving the user experience, particularly around the performance angle.
Yeah, and I'll just back up what Rafe is saying. I think there's definitely a place for IM on mobile devices. Sure, text input is a barrier, but I have spent many an hour talking to people via IM on my phone, partly because if I'm just lounging at home, I don't want to have a laptop on top of me. It's better just tap away on a phone. And if you are getting into a conversation with someone, it's more cost effective than bouncing text messages back and forth, and it's more immediate and less clunky than sending an email or doing Facebook mail. And I think when you talk about social network updates, all that stuff is in public, whereas when you get into IAM, you want to be having a private conversation with someone. And just before I let Ewan come back in, the one other bit of bad news I neglected to add about IAM for Nokia was that you also have to have a Nokia messaging account to actually use this at all, which I think might be a deal breaker for some people. So over to you, Ewan.
I think that we're all bouncing around the actual central answer. To take on the sort of UI and interface issues, and the peak on getting IAM right on a phone is very, very narrow, and Nokia have missed this peak. Certainly the fact that all of the other applications are some of the bigger downloads means people are looking for an answer to a question, but I still don't think this is the right answer. Nokia are in competition with all of those other applications. They must know those download numbers, even though they never tell us the exact numbers from coming out of the Ovi store. So why release something that is slow, you know, instant messaging? The clue is in the eye, you know. So WRT, it just doesn't cut this. And in terms of expense, I'll draw you up on that one, David. It depends a lot where you are. When I was over stateside for South by Southwest, my SMS was $2 a day for as much text as possible, and my bandwidth was limited to 100 meg when I was out and about. If I even booted up an IAM client, I probably would have lost about a meg or two as it downloads all the statuses and pictures and such. Like, it's incredibly bandwidth heavy, whereas at the time, most of that discussion was done by text. And you know, when you go into using businesses, people that you would expect to use IAM, they're all using email. And so I think that the IAM is a tricky water to navigate. I don't think it's best suited to a mobile device, and I will cede ground that perhaps I was a little bit too black and white, and there are times that it is useful on the phone. But on the whole, I don't think IAM is it's a C-level application. There are A's and B's above that. This is the point where we hand back to Steve, and I'm now going to take a risky and go, Steve, how much does your daughter use IM, and how much does she use private messaging or DMs on Twitter that aren't in public?
Quite a lot, I would say, actually. She uses something called Ping Chat, which is something you may not have heard of from the Symbian world, but it's actually Apple's own kind of IM that's proprietary to them and kind of tacked on the back of their iTunes service. And she probably sends 50-odd Ping Chat messages a day backwards and forwards to her different friends.
And so that's Ping Chat, that's the text and picture messaging thing. So that's essentially going back to sort of asynchronous model then, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay, defense rests.
Okay, we must move on though. Before we finish this podcast, we're now at about the half an hour mark. You've been talking about something called Tree Maker, and I've got these visions of you taking your green, your ecological application out into the woods around Edinburgh and planting new trees and generally getting in touch with nature. Am I totally off the ball here?
You are, yes. Do I sound like David Bellamy here? Tree walker, tree maker. No, it's absolutely nothing like that. This is a little Finnish company that have been playing around with graphics and tech demos, both on MAME on the N900. This is their first sort of real appearance in Symbian 3. Tree Maker is this delightful little platform game where you're not allowed to run left and right or jump. All you can do is throw a root up into the sky to hook onto a platform and then swing and let go. Sort of like, imagine if you had a sort of cross between Tarzan and Spider-Man, but you were across quick-setting concrete, and the only thing that could move you up was the vines and the leaves. You've got to swing around, planting tree seeds around the environment in each level. And I just love this because for a couple of reasons. First one, it looks absolutely wonderful. If you want to move on from Angry Birds and like what do physics-based games look like now, then Tree Maker is the one to look at. It has that same sort of jokiness and slick look and wonderfully smooth physics using both the graphics engine and Symbian 3 and the increased CPU power. And at the same time, it's a really hard game. I mean, there's a review going up shortly on All About Symbian, and time-dependent, this will be just before or just after the podcast. Yes, it's hard. Yes, there are only 18 levels, but I've been playing for about 3 or 4 hours, and I've only got to level 4. Yet it is still wonderfully addictive, has a great learning curve, and is a wonderful demonstration of what Symbian can actually still do. I think the unfortunate thing is that it's only been out maybe for like 2 days at most at the start of the weekend, and already signed versions of it are flooding all the sort of, you know, free Symbian super download blogger.com websites, and that's such a shame. It's a pound, You know, it's a pound that you're not going to really appear on your bill, which, you know, let's face it, nowadays is what, 10 texts or 16 seconds of IM messaging in your bandwidth. It's not a huge amount. And, you know, people go, why aren't there any good games in Symbian? Well, look, here's a good game, okay? Go pay a pound for it. Let the developer know you like it. It is a circle of applications. The developer develops. We find it. We write about it. We tell you. You download it. You pay the developer. The developer gets a check. The developer goes, great, let's do this again. The developer writes another application. He tells us, we've seen it before. We write about it again. He's still getting money from the first application. Now he's getting money from the second application. Cue James L. Jones. The circle of applications. That's how it's meant to work.
Absolutely, 100% agreed. There are even applications in the Ovi store, Podcatcher springs to mind, where I've actually bought it 3 or 4 times now on different devices, rather than just do a free download from the kind of the beta site they've got on forumnokia.com, simply because I think this is a great opportunity to send a little tip the developer's way to encourage him to keep on working on those bugs and working on updates. I think at a quid, nobody can complain. I'm completely with you on this, and I'm sure David and Rafe are too. So, we must move on. The final item on this podcast, Nokia Sleeping Screen. I was been loving the fact that all these new Symbian 3 devices from Nokia, they all have OLED screens, and they're incredibly power efficient in terms of just they can light up a few pixels and leave them on 24 hours a day without having any perceptible impact on battery life. And Nokia Sleeping Screen takes this to the next level by actually putting some interesting information, animations and other stuff up on that static, or not static anymore, this permanent display 24 hours a day. Now, David, what's new, and is it worth installing?
I think it's definitely worth installing. I mean, actually, you've done a good job of summing it up there for me. I mean, if people are familiar with Symbian 3 will have seen the clock screensaver, which is just a stark white time of day and date and what profile your phone is in. Sleeping Screen takes that to a different level by it has a very distinctive style of a very limited color palette, and it makes the resolution of the screen much more coarser, and everything's in like a very dotty, bitty display, but it looks very distinctive and very nice. And the thing I really like about it, this is art meets function, rather than just stark white, which actually, if you have your Symbian 3 phone next to you, when you're in bed and it's all completely dark, even just that white clock is actually quite bright and distracting. Now, these colour patterns, actually, it just reduces, apart from anything else, just that the different off-white colours, like blues and greens and reds and cyans, it just reduces the intensity and makes it look a lot more interesting. And actually, a lot of the patterns even have a circular battery meter indicating the battery level with a combination of blue and green dots. And there's also another option on it as well. If you set, there's a special nighttime display which just displays the time in red, and you can set what time of night and morning that will run from, overriding what you have during the day. And it just makes your phone look a lot more interesting.
Yeah. You can get that from Nokia Beta Labs. It's always a good place to check out at least once a week. There's always something interesting there put up by Nokia. Sometimes there are conflicts in terms of versions of Qt involved, and there have been some funnies in terms of Nokia Big Screen, for example. But gradually, I do hope they sort this out and that all these beta programs do play nicely together. Rafe, you got a comment?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this is this Sleeping Screen. Like David, I'm a big fan of this. I think it's very well put together, very easy to use. You know, it's just basically an implementation on the screensaver, but adds real utility to the device and so adds an extra function that isn't there. I mean, a lot of people use their phones as alarm clocks or prop it up next to the bed, but this makes it into a very useful, usable tool, kind of, if you like, for want of a better word. The user experience with this is much better, and it's, you know, very similar to an actual alarm clock. The other thing that I would note about both this and something like Nokia Bubbles is that these are things that could actually be applied to any platform. This isn't a Symbian-specific piece of functionality. This is really a result of the hardware characteristics of the screen, as Steve described there, the OLED screen and the, you know, power consumption characteristics there. So I would really hope to see Nokia take this onto their other devices, and whenever they're using an AMOLED screen, to have something like this, regardless of whether it's running Symbian or Windows Phone in the future, and possibly even lower down into Series 40 in due course. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see other manufacturers copying this kind of functionality on their own devices as well. You know, so I would expect to see that in due course, because it really is a very clever idea, I think we probably all, you know, have yeah. times when we, you know, glance over at the phone, and when the screen's off, it's a pretty much a useless object. And we often talk about, you know, where a phone's going next, and this kind of thing that adds an extra dimension, if you like. You know, it's, you know, we've talked in the past about phones that, you know, might, you know, touch and vibrate to indicate things, but, you know, here's a one we were kind of missing. It's the visual clue, and of course, yes, keeping the screen on all the time was out because of power consumption, but doing it this way, just using small dots yeah. to illustrate things, works very well. And, you know, all credit to the team that came up with this really fantastic idea.
Yeah, and it's noticeable that, as you say, only Nokia are actually doing this idea of using the OLED to display information 24/7. And one of the reasons possibly is that many manufacturers other than Nokia do tend to swap their screen technologies around. I've lost count of the number of HTC phones that have shipped with an OLED screen at first, and they switched it later to Super LCD because they couldn't get enough OLED panels. And of course, if you've then hard-baked a certain permanent screen saver into the firmware, you've then got the, draining the battery horribly on Super LCD or TFT, for example. So I guess it's a measure of the fact that Nokia really committed to OLED screens and their new models, and they're prepared to go all the way and say, right, they will be on all the time, they will be OLED, and they will have the possibility for 24/7 screen savers. So yeah, as you say, well done to Nokia, and well done to the sleeping screen team at Nokia Beta Labs. We're right out of time, guys. Remember to follow us at AAS on Twitter. Goodbye from Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from David Gilson.
Bye, everybody. See you next week.
And a goodbye from Ewan Spence, who's on the ball up in Edinburgh.
Adios, amigos. Me's going now. See, Pussycat is coming along at 80-30 miles in all of Scotland. I must be going,
and I said on the ball. He sounds more like he's on the drink. Anyway, goodbye for now. We'll catch you next time on the All About Symbian Insight.